Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me, as almost always, the Mr. Fantastic to my Mr. Terrific, it's Dan.
Good evening, Scott. Welcome. It's good to be back.
Yeah, we definitely missed you last week. It was an interesting experiment. I think it went well, but definitely we prefer having you here, kind of balance out my stupidity. So I enjoyed
your singing. So I'm thinking about just pretending I don't know how to fucking produce anymore, just so you have to do it every week.
I haven't gotten much feedback on that, so I don't know if that'll ever reoccur. There's a better chance of me doing Mason Berger again than singing. But anyway, we are here to chat up all the CW superhero shows, which means we need to bring in our little STVD All-Star Squad, which we're down by one once again this week. So we are joined by Vicky and Jason. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Good evening.
And Kate is unable to join us because apparently down in Louisiana, pigs have the ability to chew through power lines, so he does not have power and as such cannot record an internet call. So,
well, I figure, you know, he was tired of you know, walking in a circle on the rug, you know, trying to generate the electricity in his house, so he just decided to take a nap instead. No, Kate will not be joining us this week, but we've got Jason here, so we've got that, and we've got you, so I think the two of you combined should be able to fill in for Cade, at the very least.
Thanks, I think.
I don't know where I was going. You see what happens when I try to go off script. Anyway, with no further ado, I think we should just get right to it, because it is, we're starting much later than we usually like to, so I think we want to get to things quicker than normal, if I'm not mistaken. So let's kick things off with, you know, the Maid of Might herself, Supergirl. Now, the latest episode was titled The Last Children of Krypton, and, you know, this week's episode essentially picked up where we left off last week. You know, Supergirl's still hanging out with her cousin Cal in National City, which seems to delight Wynn, annoy Hank or John or whatever we're supposed to call him. I'm still not clear on that. And kind of sort of irks Alex because Kara seems to be devoting all her time and future plans to her blood relation rather than the woman who has been her sister for more than half her life. Meanwhile, we also learn more about the Cadmus Project, which is essentially a nihilistic version of the DEO, believing that all aliens are threats and need to be eliminated, which sounds awfully familiar in this day and age. Anyway, John Corbin is turned into the supervillain Metallo, who can best be described as the guy with the kryptonite heart, although this version, I'm not clear if the kryptonite that's embedded in his chest is also what actually keeps him alive, or at least powered, or what. For the episode, we get some cool fights, we get some poignant goodbyes, but most importantly, we get another solid episode of Supergirl. Now, last week we discussed what we thought of the way this show is handling Superman / Clark Kent. You know, I think I'd like to double down on that a bit more this week, but really talk about how having that character on the show really impacted the series, and as well as really all the characters like Kara, you know, and many others. Not to mention we got some really fun scenes, which I think warmed the hearts of many comic book fans and just regular people in general.
Yeah, I wasn't able to talk about this last week since I was gone, but I definitely enjoyed the first episode, and I like this version of Superman. I mean, you guys know I'm not a big fan of most of the movie Supermans, but this kind of had a feel of like the classic TV series with George Reeves, correct? And I used to watch that a bunch when I was younger, so this kind of like that Superman kind of felt like that one in a way, even though, you know, he kind of looked more like, you kind of, this Superman and Supergirl kind of looks more like a 50s type than he did for whatever reason, but but it definitely worked for me, so I liked it.
Yeah, I'm glad you piped up right there, because I had forgotten that we should be asking you about what you thought of last week's Supergirl and this version of Superman entirely. He's definitely kind of, I feel like in some ways he's kind of an amalgam of a couple different, more positive versions of Superman. You can definitely see George Reeves and Christopher Reeve. Hell, you can even see a little bit of Dean Cain in there, you know? There's a whole bunch that I think that they've quantified here.
It seemed like they were hitting on some good notes, too. Like, when they introduced the character and he, like, is running down the alley thing, throwing his glasses and stuff, I'm just like, you know what, I bet you Scott really likes this, because it just had the feel just like people that like Superman should like what they're doing here. So hopefully all the people that were doing their pissing and moaning and whiny bitching on the internet because they, like, didn't like his costume, like, 8 months ago or something, managed to, like, stop being so whiny about it.
But for most of the reactions I've seen via social media or other group pages were positive, and many a person were kind of walking back comments they'd made months earlier. That's always a mistake people make.
Oh, yeah.
When they start, the worst thing is when you start judging how these characters are by the way these still photographs look of them, because God knows that more often than not, when we've seen how a character looks in a photo, we often have issues with it. I mean, I don't think I've liked any version of Batman when I saw it in a photo before I saw a movie. You know, either be Keaton or Bale or anyone. And I love at least the first two Christian Bale movies. But when I saw the first photos, I hated it. I hated everything about that outfit. I thought it looked like he was wearing a carpet that was tacked onto his outfit and like nothing about it. But when I saw it in the movie, I loved it, you know, and same with, you know, goes all across the board. I just didn't like the way his cape attached to his outfit, but that's such a minor quibble, and I got used to it by the second episode, but I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, so I don't have too much to say about the first episode. Just, you know, for me, it was a lot of trying to play catch-up because I didn't watch most of the last season, so but I was able to get a gist of what's going on and, you know, understand. I mean, you know, I had enough of a base where I had a general idea of what's going on. So as I continue to watch it, they'll fill in a little bit blanks for me, and I'll try to watch through the first season.
I think also in the premiere, they gave us a super crazy long introduction, which was probably there to help people who might not have seen it on CBS try to catch up on what was going on. So if you go back and you put that on, you'll notice, wow, that introduction goes on for a really long time. It's like a few minutes, it felt like. So on to this week's episode. So I was curious to hear what you or Jason or Vicky or thought about how Superman interacted with people in this episode, and really how he impacted the other characters, because it definitely resonated throughout the episode without overshadowing them as well, which we commented on the first episode. One of the things we really liked about how they handled the character. Jason, I figure we can knock it over to you and get your opinions here.
Well, we got a continuation of the Superman problem that the first episode showed as to how they're going to deal with Superman in the series. And we got more of the John situation, how those two had a conflict with the DEO having all the kryptonite, and we got a resolution towards that towards the end, and we got the awkward hug from Wynn.
The Wynn stuff was great.
As a character, I really didn't like him like the first couple episodes, but he's really grown on me this season.
Is he kind of like the Cisco type on the show? Because I remember in the first couple episodes before I just ran out of time, where he seemed to just be like making uniforms, and like now, like what I've seen him do in these last two episodes, I mean, is that kind of like the role that he fits and has been?
Yeah, I'm thinking that too. I'm thinking
to a certain
the same
degree.
You were.
Yeah.
Each show has to have that character, you know, your Felicity, your Cisco, or what'd you say?
His character has progressed.
Yes.
And I think it's for the better.
Nice.
Well, also, once they removed him from the, oh, I've got a crush on Kara thing, which kind of always felt a little pointless because it never went anywhere. So it was kind of like, I didn't really see the point to that whole storyline, quite frankly. But he's definitely, there's a certain comic relief quality to him, and he's got a lot of charm. And it's also a nice memory that his father is Toyman, who's like, you know, a killer crook. So I kind of like that they've already made references to that in these two episodes as well. Jason, you had mentioned that they resolved the issues between Superman and John, right? With the kryptonite.
Right.
Now, just as a fellow longtime comic book guy, Did you not love the fact that we actually got to see Superman and John Jones in flight together, fighting together, something we've never seen in live action ever? My jaw was a little wide open during that whole sequence, I have to admit.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we never even got that in Smallville, right? Even way, way back.
Don't get me started on Smallville. I already was nailing Smallville to the wall and on a group page about something that happened on Legends tonight, which I won't spoil here. I wasn't thrilled with how they handled John Jones on Smallville either. So.
Uh-huh. Well, it kind of goes to the whole big picture of what the CW is doing with all the superhero shows that makes you think back like, wow, they actually have like a pseudo working Justice League going on encompassing all four of the shows with just the main characters and the ancillary characters going on.
Well, and at this rate, by introducing Superman as well, you know, at a certain point you could go kind of crazy with all these characters. I was the one saying I don't see how they could ever do a crisis-like thing on this. At this point, it's like, you know, they might be able to figure out a way to do it. It might be possible.
Don't forget the Flash.
For me a bit too. So, just go into a little detail about Crisis, just for people who might not know.
The very, very, very short version is Crisis was a mega comic book event from the mid-80s, which DC used to basically DC had kept creating parallel universes to kind of explain all these additional characters from different eras and from different comic book companies that they had purchased over the years. The most clear one was like, you know, the Justice Society of America from the 40s, the Justice League of America from the 60s and all that stuff. So this mega event where they essentially destroy all the universes and whittle it all down to just one Earth. That's what happened in the 80s. They've pretty much undone all that yet again. So from as I understand it, over the last several years, we're back to multiple Earths and multiple universes all over again, I guess, or something along those lines. But at the time, that was like the biggest comic book event, I think, of all time, quite frankly, that because it affected everything. And the biggest things that happened during Crisis, in turn, because they killed off a lot of characters. But the most prominent ones that were killed off were in back-to-back issues. They killed off Supergirl and they killed off The Flash. So it's kind of funny. We've got TV shows based around Supergirl and The Flash. And even when they were promoting this latest Supergirl episode, they even did a parody or homage, I should say, to that classic Crisis cover with Superman holding the limp dead body of Supergirl. So I'm thinking, you know, they might, it's conceivable they might figure out a way to do this one day. It would still be kind of insane, but I can't put it past them at this point.
But Scott, you know, it's coming.
I know.
At the end of the first episode of The Flash.
I know.
I mean, that could be the big picture if they were thinking that far ahead.
I guess the only problem with that is, as I just said, one of the two biggest things in Crisis is they kill the Flash. I have a hard time believing they'll actually get to the point of doing Crisis where they'll actually kill the Flash to end the series. Although 20-something years later, he came back, or 30-something years later, I guess, whatever it was, he came back to life, so I guess they could just speed that up. I don't know. But anyway, kind of went down. I knew I'd go down that rabbit hole as soon as I brought it up. My fault there. But it's Crisis is always fun to talk about. So, Vicky, didn't get to get your input on the Superman and how he affected people and characters this week as much. Did you have any additional thoughts about that?
It's kind of understandable, but I did just find it a little odd how Alex was all of a sudden jealous of Kara spending all this time with her cousin and talking about him all the time and making all these future plans. Just it just because it seemed there wasn't a huge time gap between episodes 1 and 2 that it seemed a little sudden. I mean, however understandable it was, but just that was kind of the only problem I had with it. But otherwise, you know, like I was saying last episode, I loved Superman in this episode. I love him and Kara being superheroes together and all of that, so.
I kind of had the impression that he'd been hanging around for, like, you know, 3 weeks or something like that. I'm not sure exactly, but I kind of felt like he'd been there for a while. So I could see how she could get, you know, tired of it after a while.
Yeah.
I thought when Kara, or it turned out that she invited him to what was traditionally their girls' night, that was like, but it's girls' night. And Superman's a lot of things. He's not a girl.
that was probably the straw that broke the camel's back.
Although I do like the fact that they were talking about Veep. I was like, oh, Veep, okay. Because, you know, these shows, everyone loves to, like, it seems all these shows want to be cool. They'll either go with either Game of Thrones or Walking Dead. That'll be the two shows they always get mentioned, all these different types of shows. So I like that they went with Veep. Like, yeah, Veep. Veep's better than both those shows. Awesome.
You know, they may have been a little heavy-handed about it, but I kind of, for me, it ended up working the way that they kind of had the two storylines going on, where Kara and Alex were having kind of a conflict, and then Superman and John were having a conflict, and they managed to kind of overcome it and team up a bit. So, well, you know, you could definitely see, like, the hand of the writer there. It didn't really feel like it was too, like, just too much. So it ended up kind of working nicely, and then they paid it off well. So I kind of like how they managed to do both that thing at the same time.
Yeah, I did find it interesting how, you know, Jean was able to put his issues with Superman aside and be so willing to help him and such. So, but that was really good that then they seemed to resolve that issue with the kryptonite and everything.
What was interesting about that for me was it made me wonder how often these two have interacted in the past. When was the last time they interacted in the past and all that kind of stuff? So, I mean, not that we're necessarily ever going to get that additional backstory and not that we actually really even need it. So in a way, what they did, it implied that there had been all these previous stuff between them. So I like the implied history between those two characters. In fact, the only thing I found odd in the entire situation between those two, and I swear I rewound it several times because I was trying to figure out what the heck they did. There is this moment when Superman and John Jones, they fly to the Fortress of Solitude, right? And then you see them land. And I swear, you can rewind it and watch it yourself, put it on slow-mo, whatever. Maybe they didn't want to go through the trouble of having John in the green CGI thing, but you just get this weird red crystalline thing for him. It was really strange. I couldn't understand what they did there. I would have rather either they went with the green CGI or they just had him look human. This didn't make a lot of sense to me. And if anyone has a chance to go back and check it out, you'll see what I mean. I noticed it and it confused me and I kept rewinding it back. And I'm like, that's just so weird. I can't understand why they did it that way.
I remember that too.
Yeah, it was a strange thing that just didn't have an explanation for it. It looked almost like it was like a red crystalline kind of a thing. I didn't know. It was very strange. Okay, switching from, you know, the fun light to the dark stuff, I was also curious to hear what we thought, not only of how they handled Metallo, who, since you mentioned Smallville, I'd forgotten that Metallo had actually been done on Smallville. So this is not the first live-action version of Metallo, actually. But also, more importantly, the further establishment of Cadmus as this diabolical organization, which we see being, apparently, it seems like it's being led by this. She's not named. We haven't gotten a name for the character, so she's just like unnamed scientist, as far as I know. But she's played by Brenda Strong on these two episodes, and I guess future episodes. She's someone we've seen on TV a million times. She was Sue Ellen Mischke on Seinfeld. She was the Ice Queen this season on The 100. She's the one who got Desperate Housewives started, being the woman who killed herself. So she's been around for forever. It's interesting that I don't know. They haven't given the character a name yet. I looked it up at IMDb. It was like unnamed scientist. I was like, really? Strange. So So Vicky, since I heard you started to say yeah, so between the stuff with Metallo and Cadmus, they're giving Supergirl different types of threats this season. So I was wondering what you thought of them, and also the fact that her sister got heavily involved here too. And let's not forget, these are also the guys who apparently have Jeremiah Danvers, who seems to be strangely impossible for Kryptonians to even find for some reason.
It seems like these are kind of going to be, Cadmus is going to be the, maybe the overarching, quote-unquote, villain of the season. Like, last season we had her aunt and Nan and all of that, and this season it's like going to be Cadmus. Totally wasn't surprised that then, you know, they tried to recruit her, Alex, but of course, you know, she's going to say no because she hates them because, you know, they took her dad. But, you know, what was it? They seemed to imply that something had been, like, done to him and he'd been, like, changed or something, I think.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting to see that play out and then find out whatever they did to him.
There is a big theory about what's been done to him. Jason, have you heard the theory?
No, I have not. I have not heard that theory.
Okay, then. Let's give you a chance before I would say anything. I'll make it really 30 seconds. The character that Hank is, I mean, they changed that for this show because his character is Hank Henshaw, but it turns out he's John Jones. But in the comics, Hank Henshaw actually becomes a character called the Cyborg Superman, if I'm not mistaken. The heavy rumor theory, whatever, is that that's what they've done to Jeremiah Danvers, that he'll be somehow like a Cyborg Superman. The fact that it's Dean Cain who has played Superman makes that very, very intriguing. Because when I first heard it, I was like, what? And then I thought, like, oh, that would be really cool. That would be really fun if they did that.
So I like that idea. I like it.
It's purely rumor and theory. There has been nothing anywhere to confirm this by anyone connected to the show. But it's a great theory. It's just, you know, it's right up there with the Jason, your awesome theory from a year ago with the Flash. So it's a really good one.
Thank you.
Dan, what did you think of Metallo since you hadn't gotten a chance to speak last week either? I was kind of curious because we've seen a lot of these different kinds of villains in all these shows we watch, and obviously some are better than others, be both the actors or the actual villains themselves. What did you think of Metallo?
You know, this isn't a character that I'm familiar with at all from my, you know, limited knowledge of DC Comics, but I was kind of impressed at how they portrayed, you know, at least the main one anyway. Just a lot of, like, you could just feel like a lot of like animal energy coming from the actor, and just, you know, really brutal. And I thought it was kind of effective, you know, an interesting concept. And of course, you know, you got to have strong, jacked up enemies to fight Kryptonian heroes.
Right.
So yeah, it worked pretty nicely, and it kind of, you know, it makes sense for you know, that kind of organization to, you know, to use a, you know, kryptonite against the alien enemies. Did you guys like the way they the Cadmus is kind of like taking a, you know, anti-aliens thing that kind of seemed like the stuff from Batman versus Superman, like the angle that they took in that? Did you guys like how they did that on the show versus the movie?
Yeah. Somewhat, but it's still early, to see where it's really going to go. Like, I also compare this to what they did in the Legion of Superhero comics as well. But yeah, hey, you know what? That's comics. We don't talk about comics much here, but
because we don't want to have a 17-hour podcast.
We don't swear. We don't talk about pizza.
Yeah.
Fuck me.
Fuck Chicago pizza, right? Oh, anyway,
I had last week. It was really good.
Wow.
Anyway, but you know, it all could possibly tie in together because, you know, maybe the Legion will come, maybe they won't. But I, you know, we'll have to see where it goes from here.
I like the idea of it. You know, it's because it's one of those ideas which there's something kind of obvious about it, but I don't think there's a way to avoid it. that, of course, if you have aliens, you're going to have people that have issues with that. That is one of the motivations that we've seen both in movies, TV shows, or comic books for characters like Lex Luthor, like different organizations or whatever. So I like, and the joke, the mild joke I made earlier on the podcast, that's not a coincidence. Don't be mistaken. Don't forget that one of the biggest issues we have in the world, in this country today, is about immigration, yeah. is about illegal immigrants, you know, which used to be called illegal aliens. That's not a coincidence. They're definitely so you can get your social justice kind of references here. It's just like what Star Trek used to do in the 60s. They're gonna be doing their thing where they're kind of making little references and you have to look for it. You know, I'm expecting. I mean, we can even say that Morgan Edge. No, not Morgan Edge. Oh, how am I forgetting his name?
I don't know the rich guy
from last season, who was in charge, who was played
Max Lord.
Thank you, Maxwell Lord. Thank you. I'm surprised they don't bring him back this season.
Yeah.
And maybe Trumpify him a little bit more.
Oh God.
I don't want them to, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did.
Oh God! I hope they don't do that.
But to finish up on Mattel, I really like the actor who played him. And I always think Metallo, and maybe it's because in the cartoon from the 90s, which is probably might be the best version of Metallo, the voice of the character was Malcolm McDowell. So in my mind, I'm always picturing Metallo, the actor, being kind of sort of British, which I believe this actor was, or at least I thought he was. So I thought it was a good choice. I thought he was really good. That whole second Metallo thing, I didn't care for that. I thought that was needless, but you know, but otherwise I really liked it. So anyway, was there anything else about this episode that, you know, you guys wanted to mention? I mean, there are a few other things that were in play here, you know, especially at Catco Industries. So I would have went to Cade first here, but he's not here. So
yeah,
go ahead.
I really enjoyed the scenes that we had with Kat and Kara this week. I think I mentioned this last week too. Just the stuff they're giving them is really good, and the dialogue could become so cheesy and like just heavy handed, but it's not. Especially where they were talking about Kat leaving. It was very realistic. It kind of showed that yes, they've kind of got this relationship now. Even Kat and, you know, Supergirl, they have a relationship, and so it's not necessarily, you know, boss and, you know, employee. It's a little bit more kind of mentor mentee thing.
Right.
So yeah, and Kat, you know, she wasn't just her usual snarky self. She showed, you know, genuine affection for Kara, even giving her a hug and stuff. So I hope that, you know, this is a good sign for, you know, whatever changes have been made between season one and season two, that, you know, this is kind of how that's going to go forward, because I will fully admit it wasn't the best last season, but they've just been doing a lot better job this year. So,
I have two questions for you, two follow up questions about her. Then, number one, did you notice that as the episode progressed, she finally and consistently started pronouncing her name correctly?
I did. Because
if you also, by the way, if you should watch the show with the closed captioning on, and the only reason I would do that for a show like this is if I'm watching it like at 2 a.m. and I don't want to wake up the neighbors or something like that. When she mispronounces her name, they spell it out that way in the closed captioning, like Kira with like two E's or whatever. But when she just said it correctly, it's typed the right way, and I noticed that. Second, let me ask you, Vicky, the scene between her and Supergirl on the balcony towards the end, did you think, and I know they kind of played with this last season, so they didn't, maybe they didn't want to go there. Did you think for a minute there we were going to get the reveal that, yeah, she actually does know that she's Kara after all? Did you think we were going to get that there?
I didn't think we would, but I think she's kind of implying that, you know, she still has her suspicions about Kara, but she's not gonna press the issue. You know, she's not gonna just, oh, I know it's you. She's kind of just leaving it as kind of an unspoken thing.
I like that essentially this show has basically adopted the silly Superman rule with, you know, apparently glasses and slightly different hair, and you can't recognize one from the other. Jason, was there anything else that caught your eye about this episode that you wanted to mention?
Well, usually there's consistently at least one thing per episode of a Berlanti show of a name drop or something that'll, even if you're distracted by something, it'll make you perk your ears up and go, what?
I know what you're going to do. Okay, go for
did
it.
You just, and that was, they name drop Snapper Carr as the boss, Kara's boss. And I was like, really? Snapper Carr is going to be the boss? I thought that was an interesting choice. But, you know, I rolled with it. It's whatever. It's not the comic. So I'm just be glad that he's on the show.
Right. We should clarify, since only three people who listen to the podcast will know who Snapper Carr is. Snapper Carr, at least from the comic books, at least iconically speaking, was DC's weird attempt in the 60s of having like a young, cool, hip guy who kept hanging out with the Justice League of America, and he kept snapping his fingers and being like everything was all cool and groovy. He was kind of an embarrassment of a character for a while. He was like the JLA's mascot. Then he did get involved in like a really serious storyline, which was all sorts of screwed up. But he was still kind of a goof. I don't know if Snapper Carr really had that many fans, quite frankly, at least during the 60s or 70s of comic books. I agree. It was an odd name to choose for this character. I would have, if you're going to take the name of a character from the DC universe that had some involvement in journalism, there's a bunch of others you could have used. So I was a little surprised that they didn't go that way. For example, like even though he's not a newspaper publisher, like I just mentioned Morgan Edge, they could have used Morgan Edge for the name. It would have made a little bit more sense. Or the secret identity of the Creeper character from DC was Jack Ryder, and he was a TV reporter. I mean, I know it's TV, but still, at least he was a reporter. That might have made more sense to use that name. So it was a very weird name for them to choose, which only means anything to comic book, long-time comic book fans. People of this generation could give two fucks, I'm sure.
I think I'm going to just refer to him as Kara's like really lame nickname for him, Jerk Guy.
So, I think that's excellent.
Oh yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Was that the guy who used to be on the Drew Carey show?
Yes,
it was him, right? Okay, yes. I never got a chance to look him up, and I know he's been on, and I keep thinking that actor's been on other comedy shows. Like I think he may be on Cougar Town or one of those.
Yeah, I think that show too. Yeah.
That is the same act? Okay, has he lost a little bit of weight? Because I couldn't tell. All right. Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that. That was the one I wanted to hear somebody mention, so well done, Jason. I think we can put a wrap on this episode now. So can we start the music and get our scorecards ready for our grade for the show? So, Vicky, what did you – and your final analysis – what do you give this latest episode of Supergirl?
I'm going to go strong and say 4.5.
Nice.
That is strong.
Well, since you spoke, Jason, what's yours?
I would go 4 stars with it.
Yep, and I'll give it 3.5.
I'm actually gonna go with Jason on this one. I'm gonna give it 4 because I got to see Superman and John Jones beating some guy up together, which I never thought I'd see. So that alone gives it a half point for me. So I'm going to go with 4. All right. So we can now move on to the Tuesday night show, which, of course, was The Flash. And this latest episode was titled Magenta. So quick synopsis. As Barry continues to learn how things have changed due to his Flashpoint fiasco. Oh, by the way, I'm writing my own synopsis now. I'm not using whatever's online. Fuck that crap. The Wells family returns from Earth 2, and now Jesse's got some mad speed powers because of that dark matter accident from last season. Of course, that bummed out Wally, who, you know, he's super bummed out because he doesn't have super speed. Meanwhile, we have a new meta threat in Central City, someone with the power to move metal with her mind. It becomes pretty clear it's going to take more than one speedster to deal with Magenta. And Harry Wells isn't all that thrilled that his daughter can now live up to her nickname of Jesse Quick. So let's get right to it, because we've been waiting a couple episodes for this now. Let's start off with the return of Wells. And you know, and maybe even more importantly for some, our new speedster, Jesse Quick. Jason, I feel like you've been one to mention her any number of times over the past year or so. So I'd like to hear your thoughts first on this one.
What about Jesse Wells?
Yes, the whole damn thing I just said.
Oh, she's a cutie, isn't she? Well, anyway. Well, anyway, it's good that we finally got a payoff for what happened at the end of last season in terms of her speed powers and how she got that little spark from Wally when she came out of her coma. And let's face it, this show is infinitely better anytime that Tom Cavanaugh shows up. And is it just me, or does he seem to be playing a slightly different version of last year's Wells? So this is like a third version. Because he seems to be slightly goofier. He's slightly goofier this year.
And he seems a little more frazzled and aggressive, too.
Right, he's not as angry. Now he's just...
Well, he has Jesse back, so...
and he's not, you know, he's not dealing with an oppressive threat at, like, Zoom anymore.
So. Good point, yeah.
Yeah, but who knew that underneath that angry exterior lied that Wayne's World... Wells underneath that.
I love the fact that the fact he kept doing that was so not funny, it made it funny. Because it was like when your parents do something, you just kind of cringe. That's what he was doing. I was like, oh, stop, dude, please stop. Anyway, go on. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
And you know what? I would be fine if every year Tom Cavanaugh got to play just a slightly different version of the same character over and over and over again. Like from American Horror Story. How they do their characters.
I want there to be a different Wells on every Earth.
Yes.
So, Vicky, I figured you wanted to pipe in on this too.
It was just a delight to get to see Jesse again. I always like my girls that can hold their own with the guys. So, girl here to clarify that, girl heroes who can fight just as much as the guys can. So it was good to see her pitch in and defy, you know, push her dad to let her help out Barry. And then we got to see at the end her new suit.
Yeah, not only that, she was not reluctant to do it. She wanted to do
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
She was wanting to do it right away.
Hey, it's kind of connected to the girl thing you just mentioned. Just refresh my memory because I did not make a note of it. There was a really funny line in this episode. I can't remember if it was Wells or Joe. I feel like it was Wells. Did someone make a comment referring to Barry as a second daughter in this episode?
Yes. Yes, when they were talking, what was it? Joe was telling Barry how he talked to Wally. He gave him dad cop, but he never had to do that with Barry because he was like a second daughter. He overshares his feelings.
Okay, this popped into my head just now. It's like, who said that? I remember, because Barry's reaction is really great to it. It's like, second daughter. Totally just, that was the most emasculating moment for that character in 3 years. Dan, I think you're also a fan of Kavanaugh and whatever. Did you have any additional feelings about them bringing him back and what they did with his daughter here?
Yeah, it was nice to see him back, and they had some good stuff with them. Like, some of it was felt a little bit hasty towards me, like his progression between being freaked out about it and like somebody says three words to him and then he's being super supportive was a little bit fast, but it worked pretty well, and he's a strong enough actor where he can make up for, well, the actress that plays Jesse isn't super strong at this point, but he's you know, good enough to make up for it, so... So that right. That. So the scene and the episode as a whole still worked, and you know, she's not a terrible actress. She definitely pulls off the you know, being really excited about having abilities really, really well. Just not quite so well about the you know, angsty stuff.
Well, she's young and exuberant. That's
yeah. And Jason thinks she's rather lovely. So there's that. That'll make up for that.
Dirty old
yes.
man.
Dirty old yes. Man.
So there's fucking Silver Fox there. Just fucking.
The latest new Flash meta, the Silver Fox.
There is a John Fox Flash.
Stop it. Stop it. Just stop. Anyway, we're going to pretend Jason didn't say that because that's another rabbit hole I'm not going down. And I will also just agree with what everyone else has said. I will also add that I just, even though we only got a little bit of it, I enjoyed just seeing Cisco and Wells interact again. They didn't. There wasn't that much of it, but there was enough just to make me smile and made me remember one of my favorite things about this show throughout the first two seasons has been the those two actors, I think, have a lot of fun together, and I like that we got a little bit of it here, and based on the trailers, we're going to see more of it in future episodes.
Next week.
That would go ahead and not Jafafafa. Anyway, you know, and I know even more about that episode. And I said, but I feel like for every Flash episode, we kind of got to talk about whoever the new meta is. Whether it's a returning villain or an all new one. So like I said before, this week we got Magenta, who is a little bit different than our average antagonist. I also wanted to point out I think Dan probably caught on to this, and Jason probably should have caught on to this. She was played by the actress Joey King.
I got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who? Okay, yeah, I knew it. But for the folks out there who don't know what I'm about to say, who fellow fans like these two gentlemen are of the fantastic show Fargo, you may remember that she played Gus Grimley's daughter throughout season one of Fargo. Gus Grimley was the character played by Colin Hanks. So it took me a little while for it to register, because obviously she's a few years older, and I kept thinking she looks really familiar, and I know her name. So I confess, it took a little IMDb, like, oh my God, Fargo, of course. So
yeah, hey guys, it's me, Jason here. Yeah, she's aging pretty well. I don't get any complaints.
That's why he goes to the Trump rallies. Wait till that 10-year-old grows up. Anyway,
what's funny is I had the same reaction Scott did when I was watching the episode. Like, wow, this person seems really familiar to me. Why do I know this person? And I went to IMDb too, and I was like, oh yeah, it's her.
What I enjoyed about that little trip on IMDb, I suddenly start having flashes of all the moments from Fargo, and I'm like, oh yeah, she was really adorable. She was really great on that show. You know, she was like the daughter who seems like she might be a little bit smarter than her dad, you know, like, I really enjoyed that. But let's talk about the character. So since we've been talking about Fargo, Vicky, what did you think of Magenta?
Like you said, it was a little bit different. She was definitely different from the rival that we had last weekend, where she didn't necessarily want to just cause, you know, be a villain and cause mayhem and stuff. She was, you know, trying to protect this, basically her, I don't know, or so call it like split personality or whatever, and get back at her foster father for abusing her.
Yeah, her motivations were definitely clearer than, you know, the rival. They're just more, you know, more organic.
Exactly.
Better in a storytelling.
Yeah.
And we don't see that a lot in this show. I mean, you know, sometimes the villains tend to have really generic cookie cutter motivation. So this is, you know, a little bit better than that. And even if it wasn't better than that, I mean, you know, she picked up a fucking like giant ass tanker as like the most overkill like way to, you know, exact her revenge upon her shitbag foster father. So that would have made up for it either way. Because I mean, you know, it's a fucking million ton naval vessel. So.
I love that.
That was an amazing moment.
That was.
Yeah, and they definitely made it. You know, one thing that I enjoy a lot about The Flash is when they let Barry and whoever do really cool stuff. So this is one episode where, whether he was, like, flying, you know, running through the air, rescuing that cop from a flying cop car, or what he did at the end here, I really like when they're able to do that, and it kind of is one of the strengths of the show. So they were able to do, like, really cool ship flying through the air, and then Barry doing something really awesome. And then Jesse helping him out and doing something awesome, so... That it all came together really nicely.
Stan, that was one of my favorites too. Okay. Was him taking the cop out. That was I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it's really so sweet.
That was such a comic book moment.
Yeah, it's
such
fun.
This whole episode is full of comic book moments like that, from the big ship over the hospital and the cop car and things like that.
She also looked great running next to him, by the way. It's unusual to see a character doing something like that, and they're not in, like, one of these typical leathery outfits. And we know she'll be in one next week. But I was like, oh, she looks pretty cool even without the outfit. That's a really nice effect, guys. So.
Yeah, between her and Barry running Iris around, I guess they've kind of dispensed with the, like, people's only Felicity's clothes turn into a flame if they run fast with somebody not wearing a costume. Oh, gosh.
So glad they've gotten rid of that.
I'm not. I was okay with that. That didn't ruin me at all.
It was completely unnecessary.
No. Less clothes, better.
Very necessary.
I'd forgotten about that.
I have a screen cap on my wall. I didn't forget about it.
Jason's already started a letter writing campaign. He's angry that her clothes didn't burn off. So.
Speaking about cool comic moments, did they ever do an uncool comic moment where Barry like makes flowers into the word iris and like the corniest dating move ever?
Oh my god!
I was more curious. They made a big deal towards the end that he's like, okay, no, I'm gonna use my Flash powers, and he whisks her off somewhere. But I don't know where he took her.
Yeah.
So I wasn't impressed by that. It's like, it's not like, oh, if they were like at the Eiffel Tower or in Rome or something. But it's like, okay, this just looks like another generic part of Canada. You know,
and he left her there.
So. And he leaves her there. How's she gonna get home? You know, that is. Do they have Uber out here? I don't know. So I was like, that's not impressive. Just put up a cheap green screen or something. Like, oh, look, there's the pyramids or something. I don't know. It was kind of lame. As much as I do like the Iris stuff, that was kind of stupid. I agree. The dating stuff was kind of a little forced, heavy, whatever. But
At least they didn't take it too seriously. Because they were having fun with it. They didn't make it seem like this is like, you know, Barry like being smooth. This is like Barry being as unsmooth as he can possibly get.
Yeah,
which is more like comic Barry than anything we've seen so far.
Right. Well, I mean, isn't it also kind of a tradition with a lot of the geekier superheroes over the years, where they tend to be whatever clumsy, goofy, stupid around women and what they do, whether it's Barry Allen here or Peter Parker or any number of others, you know, throughout time. So it's one of those bizarre comic book traditions, just to let us know, just because you have superpowers doesn't make you cool. It's like, that's not true. If I had superpowers, I'd be fucking cool. Fuck you.
You know what, though? It's pretty realistic.
I don't know. If I had those powers, anyway.
Their personality is just that way, and just because you have superpowers doesn't mean your personality like is going to just make you super smooth overnight.
With great power comes great stupidity. I get it. All right. So beyond that stuff, it does feel like there's several other things we could talk about. So I figure I'll just throw it out to you guys and bring up whatever you want. I mean, you know, whether it be everything from Wally to Alchemy to the whole Julian Albert thing on this show. Is there anything that caught your eye, or there isn't. I'll save it till later. So Vicky, since you were talking, anything that comes to mind for you that you wanted to mention?
Yes, the panic button. Such a tiny thing, but so important. It finally occurred to them to have something like that in this reality.
Oh, and picking up from that, we should mention, it's kind of a significant thing that we kind of overlooked a little bit in this episode, is that we are continuing to see things that are different in this altered timeline. That's one of the, obviously the panic button is one of them, and Barry
a
makes
whole, a whole new room in the lab.
Yeah,
and Jiggle has a son now, so instead of a daughter, John's
here. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Anyway, so stupid. All right, it's fine. Anyway, so Vicky, so you mentioned the panic button. That was definitely something worthwhile. Jason, anything pop to your head? Or that you want to
I had a couple things. Not necessarily I want to rag on, but number one was Magenta was from the comics, but in the comics she was Wally's girlfriend, so that doesn't make any sense in this reality, so fuck that noise. the next is that they seem to be making Wally, not Wally, but Barry more clean cut, and they seem to be working his image more towards a more comic version accurate of Barry Allen. He just needs white hair, and just in terms of the way his hair is being done, it's not as wild and crazy this year.
Disclaimer, maybe Jason that's also has white hair.
I love that he's focusing on Barry's hair. Go on.
I know it's just a little nitpick things.
And next season he'll have a blonde crew cut anyway.
Yeah, and the thing is that they make you want to seem like Tom Felton's character is going to be Alchemy, but that's the red herring. It's not going to be that way.
Oh,
it's going to be somebody else.
No, that'd be too on the nose.
Right? It's too obvious.
I don't think that's going to be the case either.
But you asked me last week if I had any theories.
Oh, that's right.
I'm starting to work on something. So
did you throw
out the obvious suspect already?
Speaking of Alchemy, really quickly, I haven't really looked at the character that closely because he's kind of shrouded in that outfit, so you can't really make much detail. Someone online, I forget where I saw this. It might have been on one of the group pages I'm on. I don't recall. Unfortunately, mentioned the possibility that perhaps Alchemy could be a woman, which I was like, huh, you know, anything's possible. There's no reason it couldn't be. I can't tell. So I thought that was kind of an interesting possibility that no one's even considered. I mean, I know that really shouldn't be important, but it would be kind of an interesting thing. Like, oh, look at that. That's something we didn't see coming. So just wondering if anyone heard that.
And I wonder if we're going to stumble upon something like we did last year with Zoom and Jay when we were like, well, that doesn't seem like Jay Allen. I wonder if we're going to do that again this year, because I thought that was kind of cool that we all thought of that before it actually happened.
Oh, yeah.
That's just more patting ourselves on the back about something like that.
Hey, someone's got to do it, you know.
Right. So,
can I ask you guys one thing? Is it just me? Or putting aside the dopiness of Wally in this episode, I mean, I understand. I get him being upset or depressed that he still hasn't gotten superpowers. Are they pretty much telegraphing that since he had superpowers in this that previous timeline, that somehow he's going to end up getting his powers from alchemy in some way?
Yeah,
because that's what alchemy is doing.
Yeah, they're definitely.
That was one of my notes that. Yeah. Oh, gee, Alchemy is now going to approach him. So.
Yes, yes, Evil Kosh, a.k.a. Alchemy, is probably going to try to turn Wally at some point.
Yes, and have you noticed that the voice of Alchemy is Tobin Bell?
No.
The guy from the Saw franchise.
Really? I didn't know that. I didn't even know that guy was still alive.
Yes.
Okay. I thought the actor was dead. Or maybe it's the other guy who's dead. I'm getting more confused. Okay.
I had to look that up.
Oh, I didn't know. So excellent. So once again, they're getting someone with an interesting voice who people might recognize from a specific horror movie franchise. like Tony Todd from the Candyman series, and now Tobin Bell from the Saw series. Interesting.
Yep.
Trying to think of those. Oh, here's the one thing I wanted to mention. I don't know if anyone else caught this. There's a moment in this episode when Iris is trying to protect or save Magenta's abusive foster father. And she's wheeling him out of the hospital. Or she's still in the hospital. She's wheeling him down the cart or whatever. And I had to rewind this a couple times, but I heard it and the captioning caught it. She calls him a dick.
Yes.
I couldn't. I was like,
she did.
Did they? I was like, wow, is that the harshest word that they've used on this show? Because I was like, wow, they just said dick on the Flash. Holy crap.
Right. That's another C. It's like this is a CW. Come on. It's not HBO.
I don't know what to say to that. Anyway, it made me like Iris that much more this season. She just called someone a dick. That's awesome. Anyway, all right. Okay. You know what? I don't want to get to the one now. Let's say, Jason. Okay, so we've kind of sort of liked the season so far. We've had our issues with it, but we liked it to some extent. Whatever. But we're really excited about next week's episode. So I know that you're amped up for it, Jason. I mean, if you want to say, do you know fully who's going to be showing up on next week's episode?
Just one that I know of. Mirror Master.
So number one, a Flash rogue that Flash fans like me or Jason or the too lazy to pay his electric bill, Cade.
fucking cheap ass Cade.
Mirror Master is one of our, I think we each picked him as one of our five favorite Flash villains of all time, if I recall correctly. They're finally bringing him on next week's episode. I also know that we're also going to see this TV show's version of the Top in the same episode. So that's actually two Flash rogues we're going to get. But that's not all, because a third rogue is going to be on the show. And I don't want to say who it is other than to say, hey, aren't you dead? So that's who's going to be on next week's show. So I got the strange, funny feeling next week might be our favorite episode of the season so far, just based on that. Although I'm dying to see how they explain someone's reappearance, and I'm wondering if that's going to tie into Flashpoint, in which case, does Flashpoint fuck up things on Legends too? I don't know. So I guess we'll find out next week.
Seriously, Flashpoint is just the catch-all for everything. Any kind of consistency, they could just be like Flashpoint.
Yeah, any continuity errors they make, Flashpoint.
Flashpoint. Guys. Yep. What? We should watch every TV show we ever watch now. We should just say, you know, like classic TV fans, if you watch The Odd Couple, there are more inconsistencies on The Odd Couple than any other sitcom ever, including, you know, Cheers and a bunch of others which have those issues. Now I could just say, nah, Flashpoint. Yeah, no, they met when they were kids. No, they met in jury. No, they met in the army. No, Flashpoint. No, who knows?
you just need Richard Belzer to show up on the fucking Flash now, and like it'll fix every TV show error like ever.
Oh my god, I need that to happen so bad, so bad. Anyway, okay, all right. So with all that said, I think we can get to our scorecards for this episode. So Vicky, how would you rate this latest episode of The Flash?
I'm going to say a solid 3.5.
Say that again, I didn't hear you.
3.5.
I'm
3.5.
I'm going to go with 4, but mine's usually based on a scale of like of last year of going rogue, which is like the best one or out of time, which is a 5-star episode. So this is a 4 for me, because goddamn, those are really hard episodes to top.
I am going to join the other three and give it a 3.5 as well. And I just realized I forgot to write down the ratings for the other one, but since Dan's actually keeping track of this, I don't have to worry about that.
I got this
one. I'll get it from you later. But I'm anal, so I want to have it as well. So. All right, so we are on to the next TV show in which Jason, are you going to be taking a break at this point because you haven't seen the latest Emerald Archer episode?
No, I'm going to go to the bathroom and get a beer, and I'll be back.
Okay. Thank you for the too much information portion of our podcast.
Maybe get the beer and bring it to the bathroom so you can start drinking it while you're there, and then maybe you can maybe get another beer on the way back.
What a waste.
Or maybe drink the beer while you're going to the bathroom, so it's like an ongoing stream going in and out of you all at the same
time. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Of course, we're all assuming that's what you have to do in the bathroom. So maybe...
Yeah.
Oh, boy. It just got stinky in here. All right.
It did.
Go get your beer and your toilet on there.
Be right back.
Okay, enjoy. So next up, we have the latest episode of Arrow.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Now, this latest episode was titled A Matter of Trust, and we found Ollie is continuing to try to balance his mayoral duties while building his new team. Unfortunately, he's getting pounded in the press by a TV pundit on Channel 52 due to Thea deciding to hire Quentin Lance as a deputy mayor. Meanwhile, two of his recruits ignore his rules by going on a recon mission that turns into a huge mess that also accidentally transforms a drug dealer into someone else or something else. That feels no pain. Yeah, I know. We also learned a bit more about Ollie's Bratva days, and we also find out that Diggle is now behind bars, and maybe he's got an unexpected cellmate. Now, oh, by the way, I know the villain in this episode was played by the professional wrestler Cody Rhodes, who's better known as Stardust.
Yeah.
And I know over the last year, Stephen Amell appeared on those WWE shows and fought him, blah, 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 whatever. And they got really cute, and they named the new lethal drug on the show after his wrestling character, which is kind of weird if you really think about it, but okay. But beyond the obvious cribbing of a very Joker-like origin, although if you think about it, how many different superpowered beings have ended up being doused by chemicals or falling into a vat or something? Do we really have that much to say about the villain in this episode, other than maybe the fight scenes with Green Arrow were perfectly fine? I mean, Dan, is there anything really notable about it? Because I was like,
yeah.
It was very villain of the weeky. So.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, he was, you know, cool enough villain. I enjoyed how he couldn't feel pain, and then Oliver just, like, sliced all his fucking tendons, and he was just done for. So that was cool.
Yeah,
They weren't being too over the top with, like, the Joker-ish reference, but they did point out that, like, you know, there wasn't any, like, acid-type burn, so just, like, they were like, okay, you know, just in case, it's, you know, like that.
Just in case.
Yeah, so, but it wasn't, like, annoying or obnoxious, it was just, like, a nice
potential
Easter egg, so I like when they do that. It isn't once upon a time jamming lost garbage down your throat garbage, it was fine. No offense, Vicky.
Oh, I don't care.
I would agree with everything you guys said. I mean, it's very villain of the week, but not to the point of being, like, an annoying villain, like, you know, some of the ones I've hated on The Flash over the last year or two, you know, the volcano, whatever his guy, puck coming up, or whatever his name is, Pokemon guy, whatever his name is. But I liked, you know, I thought the fight scenes were good. That tendon slicing thing, that was pretty fun. That was, I mean, maybe fun's not the right word for it, but pretty cool.
Impressive.
It was like,
fucking hot.
Gotta take off my shirt now.
Wow.
So, but I'd like to maybe talk a little bit more about the recruits that we're dealing with on the show now, because we certainly got into them a bit more in this episode. You know, everything from Curtis and the Mr. Terrific stuff to, Ragman or Rory explaining how he can't help that spooky voice he has, and then all the stuff between him and Felicity. I wonder if there were maybe more thoughts on how. Now that they're solidifying these characters on the show, you know, how they're settling in here, and as we're getting further into the season, how is this new team looking in comparison to what I guess was the previous Team Arrow, so to speak? So, since there's only two of you, you know, Vicky, if you want to go first, and Dan can, you know, chime in anything that you haven't said. What do you think of what they're doing with all these characters right now?
Yeah, no, I think it was, you know, important that, like, for this episode, they kind of focused on the team building that trust and just trying to come together and some forth, and not just focusing more on a super important villain. So, like we were saying, he was very villain of the week, but that was in service of the more important thing of them, you know, coming together and stuff. So, I thought it was good how he got kind of like, you know, background on how the whole Mr. Terrific thing, you know, he is doing it like in his kind of an homage to like a wrestler that he was a fan of when he was younger. I don't know. Is that kind of how it is from like the comics? Or, I don't think so, right?
No, not that I know of.
Yeah. It seemed a little kind of they're just throwing that in. But so, yeah.
Dan?
I'm enjoying it so far. I mean, they seem to be like they're moving in the direction we've seen before, where like Ollie just does dumb stuff and just keeps doing it over and over and over again. But they seem to be kind of like he's actually learning from his mistakes instead of wallowing in them for like 5 or 6 episodes. So maybe they're kind of fixing like what tends to be a pacing type issue and just kind of like a repetitive crap issue on Arrow. So he's able to like learn and maybe listen a little bit. So, I mean, I could see there's a potential for them to just kind of, you know, ram Wild Dog being kind of, like, obnoxious and not listening down our throat, or Curtis being just kind of a little bit over the top, and, you know, Evelyn Sharp not being allowed to talk for some fucking reason. But Ragman's kind of awesome, and I think there's potential there, so if they can, you know, if the writing staff has learned from previous mistakes and can kind of just, you know, tone it down a little bit and just not just do the same thing over and over and over again. I think they have a potential for an interesting dynamic here. It's a pretty safe bet that like one of these characters is going to be toast by the end of the season, but who knows? But it's cool so far.
Hey, I'm back. Just wanted to let you know that I love the fact that Wild Dog is on here. I talked about this last week, Dan, but I love the fact that Wild Dog is on this show just because it's fucking Wild Dog.
To pick up on Jason saying that, I will confess that I probably liked, maybe as a, I don't know if it's so much as a character or maybe just in action, I probably liked Wild Dog more this week than I had in the previous episodes. I mean, I don't love the character yet, but he's kind of growing on me a little bit. Maybe it's his interactions with others. I don't know.
Yeah, he's growing on Ollie a little bit too, so I think that might be tied to that for you.
That might be.
He is becoming less annoying.
Right. And yeah, they still need to give. I mean, I'm still not clear what the deal is with Evelyn Sharp's character. I mean, does she have does she have any specific alias vigilante thing? I mean, I know she played like she was like filling in as like a young Black Canary last season, and maybe that's what they'll end up doing with her. But right now, she's just like nameless girl who doesn't say very much.
They might just be taking their turn, so like they'll have 1 week where it's like this week Wild Dog fucked up and they had to kind of learn from it and Ollie, whatever. So it might just be the kind of thing where they're giving the characters like room to grow, and then next week it'll be Evelyn Evelyn and Ragman slash Felicity doing something. So they might be kind of that thing where they're just, you know, not doing it all at once, which I'd be okay with, but they need to get to it before too long or else we're just going to think they're being, you know, I don't know, idiots.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, pretty much. I did enjoy all of Curtis's stuff and his talking about Mr. Terrific and having that fair play jacket, which, I mean, his outfit and his look is based on the Michael Holt version of Mr. Terrific that's been in the comics for the last 20 to 15 years. I can't remember when it started. Not really that important. The one significant thing when he talks about the professional wrestler, but he's referring the name that he refers to, that's actually the original Mr. Terrific from the 1940s comics, Terry Sloan, who was a character who also wore an outfit that said fair play on it. And he was just basically, he was just like the smartest guy who could figure out everything. And he was a pretty good fighter. That was pretty much what he could do. It wasn't like he was, you know, super, super duper strong or anything, but he was just a better guy than everybody else, essentially. Yeah. I don't know how else to describe him. It's a very... He's of those iconic semi-iconic characters from the 40s, he's a bit of a more difficult one to really explain compared to, you know, whether it be someone who has powers or someone who decides to have batarangs or arrows or whatever, or wings. He's just a guy who's interested in being fair, and he's smarter than everybody, and he can beat the crap out of you. It's really a tough one to explain. But I love him.
And he had a cool costume, too. Even with a fair play thing on the front.
He's a little weird.
Oh, you're talking about the current one. Yeah, wait, Jason, are you talking about the classic one or the one or the current one?
Classic one.
Yeah, the classic one is an interesting outfit. The current one, I like it. I've seen some people react negatively to it, and I'm like, but that's how it looks in the comics, so shut up. But I kind of like the – he needs to start having the – they already showed last season that Curtis had been developing those little devices that were called – that we call T-spheres. You know he's going to have to use that as a character. That's something this current Mr. Terrific has, are those little globes that he can do all sorts of shit with. So I'm sure he's going to have to incorporate that into his repertoire or whatever, I guess.
Yeah, but bringing it back to Evelyn a little bit, I mean, to be fair, she did have an episode last year that kind of established her pretty well, so I guess maybe it's okay to be patient and let them have a little time to establish Ragman and Wild Dog a little bit more, because, I mean, I guess, you know, if you think about it big picture, I mean, we do know more about her than we do them at this point, so as long as they don't wait too long to give her some stuff to do.
I guess I think you're right, but I think the problem for me, at least for a show like this, is the assumption that our memories are really that good. Because do I really remember much about that specific episode? No, I can't say that I do. It's like in the flashbacks. I sort of kind of remembered who Ollie's friend is there in Russia.
Anatoly.
But I did have to strain to, like, wait, so that was the guy from season 2 with the submarine? Was it that guy who is kind of helping? That's who he is, isn't he? That's where we know him
from. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's where he's from.
That's a bit of a deep dive, because we got to go back, you know, all the way back to season 2. Thankfully, at least those flashbacks were watchable, so at least I didn't, you know, blot them out of my mind like seasons 3 and 4. But still, it took me a while to, like, oh, that's right. When he mentioned Amazo on it, and I was like, oh, he's from season 2. Now I know who he is. But last couple episodes, I didn't remember who the hell it was.
Yeah, I think maybe if we get kind of like an Evelyn episode, they'll do that brief thing, you know, at the beginning of the episode, like previously on, and they'll show clips from it, you know, bits from the previous episode.
They need to have an episode where she's, you know, her development's the A story, and then, you know, they can do, you know, Ragman and Felicity making up or something as a B story or something, and that would be a good way to move the show forward.
Oh, and just to echo what you mentioned, I still am continuing to love the fact that Ragman is even on this show. I am astonished that that character is on the show. I am digging. I like the actor so far. Yeah. He's very likable. He's very believable in the part. And the stuff with Felicity, I thought that was like a really interesting storyline. And how do you tell someone that you're responsible for basically destroying his town and presumably his loved ones? That's a tough one. And I hats off for them doing that.
Yeah, hopefully they don't drag it out for too long, and they, you know, actually resolve it, which they seem to be doing a little bit better with this season. So, because they only need six episodes of like tension between them about this, even though
that would be a drag. But it's one of those difficult things on whether it be this show or The Flash. It's like, do we complain when they resolve things too quickly, or do we complain when they took too long? It's kind of like when I watch like some of these Netflix shows, like the Marvel shows, where certain things are dragged out way too long, and it's a really good quality show, but it's like, oh my God, they just spent how many freaking episodes with this character being walking around wounded? It's like, did I just watch like 4 episodes where that's been the case? That was the case on a show I recently watched on Netflix, which is why I don't think it's quite as great as I thought it was going into it. But back to this.
I think you're talking about Luke Cage, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. One last question about the back to Wild Dog, actually. Those are regular guns he's using, right? Is he just basically killing people? Because he seemed to be shooting like everybody.
I wouldn't be surprised if he was.
Jesus Christ. Then they're back to doing that. I mean, he's not doing like the Terminator 2 thing and just shooting people in the kneecaps, I don't think. It looks like he's just shooting people. Okay. Oh, boy. All right. So last week when we were talking about Arrow, I think we were all kind of sort of meh on the Diggle storyline with the army stuff. So this week, I think they went a little bit more memorable for us. So I was wondering what you guys thought. And my first question has to be, did you think, at least for a minute there, that we were having another Flashpoint situation happen on the show? Because that was my thought for like half the episode. It didn't. What did you think, Vic?
Yeah, for that brief bit, I did. I was like, wait, he's alive now? So, yeah.
Thank you, Flashpoint.
Yeah. So then that just opened it. Okay. Now, like, who else is alive now? But yeah, so no, I think they did a good job because we were saying, you know, the first two episodes we were just like, okay, why are they showing us Diggle back in the army? Are they just doing this to waste time? But they've kind of seemed to have found a way to connect it back to the main story within bringing in Lila, and then, you know, what it looks like is going to happen next episode. So it's maybe not so bad as we first thought. They didn't drag it out forever and was boring and pointless. It seems to kind of connect it.
So, Dan, if I recall, I actually let when you were doing the when we assign, when I assigned you all those different Arrow episodes from different seasons to watch to try to catch up. If I recall, I think I left out one of the major episodes with Deadshot in it. So
yeah, I remember there was some reference where he had like done something like Diggle related that Diggle was pissed at him about, but I didn't know about. But I was able to catch up because, you know, they kind of covered it.
Okay, so what did you have any opinions about how they handled the jail scenes with Diggle and I guess we'll call him Deadshot?
Yeah, I thought, you know, I thought it was fine. I'm not really digging this. Diggling this storyline so far, but the possibility for some like chaotic escape where he teams up with a villain, I mean, you know, it's definitely contrived, but it should be fun. So I can see him paying it off well. So as long as they don't, you know, like Vicky said, as long as they don't fucking dick it around forever, like Vicky said, should be okay.
That's exactly how she said it too.
Hey,
damn right. Yeah,
she's got perfect paraphrasing. Such a potty mouth, Vicky, I swear, man.
Man.
I will say that I was a little disappointed when it turned out that Deadshot was essentially a figment of his imagination. Only because that's one of those devices it's just so many shows have done that. And sometimes you see it coming, sometimes you don't. But at a certain point, it's like, oh, okay, enough. You know, I think every other show I've watched in the last 5 years has done that at some point. And I'm just like, and I'm more annoyed that it didn't occur to me earlier on. I just was thinking, oh, it's Flashpoint. Because I want to have this. Oh, by the way, I want there to be a scene at some point in the season on Flash where it turns out like all these other people turn out to be alive and Barry stupidly makes a comment like that. And I want Cisco to be like, so let me get this straight. All these people get to come back from the dead, but my brother has to pay the price for your stupidity. Anyway, I'm glad that at least it's tying to the other characters, and you know we'll get to the point of him breaking him out of prison and getting on with things, because it has been a bit of a time suck. At least the scenes with Deadshot were a bit more entertaining because I kind of enjoy that actor and I just like that version of Floyd Lawton on the show. It is interesting to see him after having seen Will Smith do the character a few months ago in Suicide Squad. So it was like, I can't believe it was okay for them to do this, but they did it. But you know, it was better than last week, but still, I was annoyed by the whole, oh, just leave me to rot in jail because I feel guilty about killing my brother thing. It's like, oh, shut up. You have a wife and child, and you're going to leave them? That annoyed me. Okay, so since we're in dead silent mode, is there anything else about this episode you guys felt worthy of mention, whether it be Thea or Bratva or anything else? Dan, anything else that occurs to you?
I'm kind of mildly concerned about how they're going to use Thea, for a while. I mean, I'm definitely liking it, and her performance has been strong, but I'm just kind of, worried that they're not going to have anything to do with her, and they're just going to start shoehorning in, like, kind of lame storylines like this, even though it ended okay, but it was just kind of,
Well, do you think she'll end up donning her outfit again, and she'll go into vigilante mode again, or is she just going to continue to just be, like, his chief of staff or whatever the hell they're doing with that?
I don't know. I'm not really sure what I really don't have an idea what they're going to do with her. So, we did see her doing some kind of she wasn't wearing her costume, but she was kind of using her skills this week. I think it was this week, right? Anyway, I've watched so many of these shows lately; they kind of run together. But you know, there was that where she was able to do that. And
I think I'm worried that Thea's character will only become more interesting if her dad is around, and I hate that to be the case, but after, I guess we're three episodes in, although I think the actress is improving as an actress, because if going back to like season one, I think she's pretty bad in season one, but I think she in the early season, but she's definitely gotten better, maybe because the character has also grown and matured like the actress has. But I agree, they need to give her something more to do that doesn't, again, the problem with the show can be that you have storylines or characters that just are feel like space fillers.
Yeah, you don't want to start doing like Laurel crap with her. So you know what, she's going to be like doing heroin in like 3 weeks or something. I mean, no. Heroin, the drug, not being a female hero suiting up.
And then I think the flashbacks were, although they felt more brief, but I still think it worked this week. I mean, they didn't. Although, is it just me, or was it not as much this week as previous weeks? Or did it just seem that way to me?
Yeah, small doses, and just kind of they're being used to slightly explain how Oliver's acting today. Where it's not been it's been fine. It isn't bad, so if the flashbacks aren't bad, they're pretty fucking good.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, Vicky, was there anything else that you thought was worthy of mention here, or should we just get to the scorecards?
Yeah, I think we pretty much covered everything. We're good.
I had a feeling we were going to wrap this one up quickly. All right, well, since I got you talking already, what did you think of this episode score-wise?
You know what? I'm going to give it a 3. We'll go with that.
Ooh, interesting. You gave it a... What? Yeah, go on.
I'm going to give it a 3.5. I enjoyed it a little bit more than last week just because Oliver wasn't being quite such of a whiny fuck, and the Diggle storyline was a little bit more interesting, if something we've seen a zillion times before. So it gets a 3.5. I enjoyed it. There's some fun stuff and some good action scenes and some sweet tendon cutting.
I'm trying to rack my brain to remember what I gave it last week. Pardon me, did I just burp into the podcast? Sorry, guys. Oh, here we go, Scott. Is that what I gave it last week? Huh. Really? Are you doing that music over whatever music we're actually going to be using?
Yeah.
I just realized. Should all be doing different music. You, Vicky, can do concentration, Anyway, I'm going to give it a 3. I'll make it a 3. If it had more rag meta, I would have given it a 3.5.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. So with that, I think we are going to be saying goodbye to someone. I'm not clear.
Are you leaving?
Oh, no, we're not. Jason, are you sticking around? You're going to stick around. You have nothing to do.
Yeah, I've got nothing else to do. I'm listening now.
All right. So, it's one of those things I just remembered what it is we wanted to do. So let me proceed to the final show of the night, which will be Legends of Tomorrow.
Drinking beer, listening to you guys.
That is not the title of the episode. The title of the episode is actually... Oh my gosh. The title of the latest episode is The Justice Society of America. But since we have Dan here this evening, Danny, I think you wanted to do something a little bit out of the ordinary for us this week. Am I mistaken?
Yeah, I'm still playing catch up on Legends of Tomorrow, so I was able to watch almost all the first episode while we got set up for the podcasting tonight, and hopefully I'll be able to catch up one of these weeks and record currently with you, even though I'm not sure if the timing will work out, but I watched last week's episode, almost all of it. I haven't got to the end yet, so I'm not sure how it ends, but I enjoyed it. You know, they seem to have trimmed some of the fat, and I'm not sure if the Albert Einstein stuff worked super well for me, and the Nazi stuff was, just kind of meh. But it wasn't bad, and there was some cool action and stuff, so I see potential for it to be good. Of course, I haven't seen tonight's episode yet, so I'm not exactly sure how that.
Wow, I think Dan just got zapped out of time there. What the hell was that?
Goodness.
Where did he go?
Oh, my God.
He must have gotten kidnapped by the team.
I think he went a little Sam Beckett on us, quite frankly. It's so sad, because if he could have stayed with us, I would have told him, oh, my gosh, you haven't gotten to the best part of that fucking episode yet. The last, 3 minutes are better than the first 40 minutes. So you've got something to look forward to wherever you are, Dan. But so let's talk about tonight's episode. Now, Jason, you haven't seen tonight's episode yet, is that correct?
That's correct.
So it's up to you whether you want to listen to what we have to say. It's only me and Vicky, so it may be fairly quick. Which might be a good thing, because I got a feeling if Cade was here, we might have ended up spending at least another half an hour here, so maybe we'll be a lot faster as a result. So this episode was, as the title was, The Justice Society of America, and basically it's about our heroes encountering and, teaming up essentially with the Justice Society of America in 1942 to, fight the Nazis and try to retrieve this amulet that they are trying to get to Hitler, which I'm sure if Jason had seen the episode, he would probably be able to rattle off what that is actually from. I kind of recognize it, so I think they are taking something from the comics to a certain extent here. They've often done stuff with Hitler and his antiquities in the comics. It's like Raiders of the Lost Ark or something, but before there ever was a Raiders of the Lost Ark. But that's essentially what this show was. It was basically them and the Justice Society of America and how they interacted. So, Vicky, I know that you don't quite have the familiarity with that team. which in many ways might be a good thing in this situation. So but you're looking at it with totally fresh eyes. So I was curious, what did you think of the JSA and how this whole episode played out? We're not going to break it down into little things. We're just going to talk about the episode in general. So, cause we both just watched it tonight. So what'd you think?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was just super interesting. I loved all the GSA members. I don't think I caught everyone's name. I know there was Captain Steel, Stargirl, Vixen, and I'm not really sure the other the names of the others.
Okay, you had Commander Steel.
Yeah.
That's Stargirl, Dr. Midnight.
Okay.
Vixen and Obsidian. I think those were the characters that they used in this episode.
Okay. Yeah, no, I really liked it. What was it? Vixen is, I think we mentioned this, she's the grandmother of the other Vixen that we already know from last season, from like Arrow and Flash and that crossover there.
Right.
They had every right to be suspicious of the team. Anytime anyone says anything about time travel, you're going to automatically think they're crazy. But I think, you know, once they're like, okay, yeah, okay, they kind of begrudgingly agreed to work with the Legends. They worked really well, and I just overall really enjoyed it.
My take on the episode was this. I mean, the first several minutes, I'm a classic JSA fan, and there have been any number of iterations of that team over the last 75 plus years. It is the very first superhero team ever, predating everybody else, predating the Justice League, predating every Marvel character, team, whatever. They were the first. This version, I left out that Our Man is also a member of the team. He's actually the leader, Rex Tyler, this episode. They picked a couple members that were, or versions of a couple characters that have been JSA members for at different points in time, like Our Man. Our Man goes back to the 40s. This is a version of Dr. Midnight. There was a Dr. Midnight back in the early 40s as well, and throughout the history of the JSA. Vixen's never been on the team. That's new. Stargirl is an addition that was created in the last 15 to 20 years by Jeff Johns, who's like one of the main head honchos at DC now. Since, I think I said last week, based on his sister. She also appeared on the Smallville show. JSA actually appeared on Smallville also. I should point, this is not the first time we've seen the JSA in live action. They just did a pretty piss poor version of it on Smallville. And Obsidian is a more newer member. He's actually the son of the original Green Lantern. It's interesting that in this episode that they didn't, other than showing Obsidian's powers, they didn't really do anything with him. We know that he's going to appear on later episodes, and we're going to get to find out about him because they got a really big deal actor to play him, Lance Henriksen. But in this, he might as well have just been a stuntman because he just had the mask on the entire time. They also didn't really do much of anything with Dr. Midnight. I was a little disappointed in that because Dr. Midnight is kind of a legendary character, as far as I'm concerned. And I thought it was a very bold choice that, well, let's face it, they made him a black guy. And I don't have a problem with that at all. I thought, oh, that's interesting. Okay. But it made me more curious. Just same way by having Vixen on this team, it made me more curious. And the fact that this wasn't going to be addressed kind of bothered me just a little bit because this is 1942. There is something to be said that they've got two black characters on this superhero team of six people. That's kind of a big deal. It's a big deal now. And two women. But if you read a comic in the 40s, you might come across the fact that there were a couple women on the team. It might have been Wonder Woman. It might have been Black Canary. It might have been Hawkgirl. That's not shocking. You didn't get black characters showing up that weren't like horribly racist stereotypes, at least until like, you know, the mid to late 60s, quite frankly. So that I applaud that they did that. Although it's kind of like it's 1942. Okay. Oh, we'll go along with it because, you know, whatever. I enjoyed it as far as the rest of the episode, how it played out. I did enjoy it for the most part. I think I enjoyed it more because I'm really liking the character, Nate Heywood's character a lot.
Yes.
I think he's a great addition to the show. I really like the actor. I really like the character. And the fact he has such a great connection to the JSA, as in the comics, that he's, you know, related to Commander Steel, because he eventually, as Cade would be piping in right now to say, he becomes, I think, Citizen Steel, I think. I think that's his name, or unless I'm getting confused with Citizen Cold, I don't know.
No, you're right, it's Citizen Steel.
Thank you, Jason. I'm glad you were listening. I knew you could come in and fix that up for me. So I'm really liking that character. And so that's an improvement. There are some things I'm a little leery of. There is one big thing I'm worried about now. Because the implication by the time we get to the end of this episode and then we see the trailer for the next episode, or if you hop online on IMDb or whatever, it looks to me like Vixen is going to be joining them and becoming, and perhaps in some ways becoming part of the team. But, oh, God help me. They might be doing something where they're laying the groundwork for there to be some sort of relationship between her and Ray Palmer. I just want to say, hey, guys, honestly, guys, you don't need to do that. Honestly, you don't. You can have a show with these characters where there isn't some stupid relationship like that. Especially when, really, you didn't learn from the Ray and Kendra stuff. I mean, I think I like this actress a little bit more than the actress who played Kendra. Although she kind of did annoy me in a couple of scenes in this episode, I will confess, because I thought she was being a little bit too negative without cause to back it up. But then I realized, oh, wait, are they building a thing here where she's going to be all negative about it now? And then they're going to end up bonding and becoming something else. Please don't. Please, guys, don't do that to us. Just leave it be. I'm hoping that they don't go there, but I got a bad feeling that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, I to say, you know, how some of the other Obsidian and Dr. Midnight weren't really showcased. I think, you know, they're kind of using this as an introduction for the team. So hopefully we will get some more of them later on. So
hopefully, I mean, yeah, I mean, we know that Vixen is going to continue to be on the series. We know they cast someone to play Obsidian who's kind of a major actor, so we know we're going to see him again. I will confess, Jason, put your fingers in yours for a second. I will confess, I was genuinely shocked by what happened at the end of this episode. I was like, what? For any number of reasons. I kept going, can Flashpoint change that, please? Because that really bothers me. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway. And by the way, I know by saying Flashpoint and what actually happened is actually even more appropriate now that I think about it. I don't know if that can be undone or not, but, you know, wow, that's really something there. So kind of dying to see what happens next week as far as building on that. I love to say I see things coming from time to time. You know, that one, wow, did not expect that. You know, geez.
Yeah. I will say I enjoyed it. When Stein was singing in the nightclub and he chose the Edelweiss.
That was, I thought that was fantastic. I probably have never liked that song as much as I have been using it here. Perfect song to use. And I'm pretty sure that might have been his actual singing voice. I think that he was actually singing. I mean, so I was kind of impressed by that as well. You know what? I'm always going to be a sucker for Nazi stuff, which probably didn't sound quite right, but I don't care. they're always like the easiest villains to go to.
They are.
Because, you know, and, you know, so... everyone loves punching out Nazis, so I love it.
What a great job that would be for you, Scott. I love anything Nazis. Great.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm also hate men, or I should say that on the podcast. Anyway, did I love the whole thing with the Nazi injecting himself with the serum thing? Not so much. It was fine. I didn't love it, though. I think they were having a little bit of fun referring to the super serum. I think they were definitely winking at certain things from other comic books and other comic book characters.
Well, he
other
comic book basically companies. Turned into the Hulk. Except he was not green.
He basically turns into the Hulk, but he's doing something which sounds an awful lot like a Captain America kind of thing.
Yeah.
I kept thinking they're doing a little Marvel thing here, aren't they? It's kind of fun.
Sorry, I had a question. Now since they gave Nate the modified serum to heal him, do you think there's gonna be like any more from that in the future or just
Yes. Okay. I think there's absolutely going to be a side effect from that which will affect him. I would be very surprised if they don't, because I kind of think he's supposed to be. Since he's listening in, hey Jason. So isn't Citizen Steel? He's got some stuff going on with him. Doesn't he have enhanced strength or something? He's not just like a totally regular guy, is he?
Yeah, I think that's how it goes. Yeah, I'm not completely 100% sure on him, but yeah, I think that's what it is.
I think he has somewhat enhanced strength or whatever, and he also he's the one who wears a really cool outfit, or is that the previous Steel, that really cool red, white, and blue metallic outfit? Isn't that what he wears?
Yeah, Commander Steel wore that.
But the character they did in 1942. Oh, by the way, there was no... Again, you can correct me again if I'm wrong, but I know I'm not wrong on this one. There was no Commander Steel on the JSA in the 1940s. That's all bullshit. So.
No, he was part of the All-Star Squadron.
Oh my God, he's the All-Star Squad. Oh, okay. Forgot about that. To fill that in for people who don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, DC Comics came up with this other superhero team in the 80s, which took place in the 40s, which wasn't the Justice Society of America for some reason. They called themselves the All-Star Squadron, which, correct me if I'm wrong, seemed to include or encompass essentially every single Golden Age character ever created, plus new characters. Is that essentially what they did?
Yes, including the Justice Society of America. What it was is that Franklin Delano Roosevelt had drafted all the heroes into the All-Star Squadron.
That's right. They were like it was almost like a military unit for.
Yeah, yeah. So. But the book mainly focused on the heroes that you did not know about, like Robot Man and Commander Steel and.
Right.
Firebrand, right, Johnny right. Quick.
All right, enough. Stop. Anyway, that's right. That's where he's from. Okay, I totally forgot about that. See, I'm glad you were here to fill that in, even though that will mean nothing to nobody. But I appreciate it because I loved that comic when I was a kid. You know, I loved
it too.
That was a good comic. Anyway, memory berries here. So this was otherwise, I thought this was a fairly strong episode. I think in many ways it was my favorite episode of the series. Not that it didn't have some issues, but compared to the issues of every other episode of this show from last year, I mean, no Hawks, no Vandal Savage. I sort of, the stuff with Marty Stein not being a really good leader felt a little contrived or forced to me. I didn't quite believe he would be quite as flummoxed as he was. I wish they could have gotten to that a bit more. What's the word I'm looking for? Not smoothly, but just, I don't know, just something a bit more clever about it. It seemed a little bit.
It did feel very contrived, kind of just the fact that, Rex just assumed because he's a man that, you know, Stein was in charge and he couldn't possibly be Sarah. I knew she was going to be the eventual choice.
Oh, I didn't mind that because it's 1942. So yeah he's going to go. I mean, they even said in the episode, but that I actually thought was believable that, yeah, the old white guy, you must be the guy in charge. You're the well-spoken guy because everyone else is like, you know, a dork, a black dude, a criminal, and a chick. Yeah, it's got to be that guy. I get that. That's fine. I'm talking about the way Marty was acting and him being all, and I was like, I'm not believing it after a certain point. I thought there was one or two good lines. I liked him saying that he's you know, I'm not going to be able to pronounce it. Damn it. Theoretician, not a tactician. Or theorist is right, probably what he should have said, or maybe that is what he said. I don't remember now. I thought that made sense. And yeah, I agree. I thought from the get-go, yeah, it's going to end up being Sarah. You know how we knew it was going to be Sarah? Before the episode started. Because they switched who did the opening.
Yeah.
And Sarah did the opening. Now, that might be a thing that every week they have a different character doing the opening. That might be what they do, which I think is not a bad idea. But that was the first thought I had when I was watching this. I was like, oh, she's going to be in charge of the team because she did the opening. And she didn't use the bullshit like arsonist. I like that they had him saying arsonist and assassin like he does in the opening. Which kind of annoyed me last week.
Oh, I will say, I know because I know we mentioned this previously. They did. It does seem like they tightened up the intros for all these shows.
Yes, I did notice that as well. Supergirls was much shorter. This episode and this show was much shorter as well. I wasn't really paying as much attention during Arrow, or Flash for that matter. I don't think, but yeah,
they both were at least a little bit more so.
Good. Okay, so I think we're definitely looking forward to where this storyline goes as far as the rest of the JSA, either how much we'll see of them in the future episodes, and who else is going to show up this season. I'm kind of drawing a blank on all the people that I heard were supposed to show up, which I kind of enjoy. I was like, oh, good, maybe I'll just be surprised from time to time. Although I know Jonah Hex is going to show up again, so we'll wait for that. And we are waiting to see if Rip Hunter does show up again. Pretty sure he should. I'm kind of surprised, but
I haven't heard otherwise about Arthur Darvill. So,
all right. Well, it's only the two of us. So, what will you give this episode?
You know what? I'm gonna give it a solid 4. I enjoyed it a lot.
You are going to give it a solid 4. I am going to give it a fuck. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not gonna do that. I'd like to give the first few minutes a 5, but I was all prepared to give it a 4.5, but I keep being worried about the Ray Vixen stuff, and I know I shouldn't hold that against this episode because maybe it's not going to happen, but I'm going to hold it against the episode anyway because I didn't like the Nazi Hulk stuff. I thought was a little stupid, so I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to give it a 4 as well.
I'm going to give it a wait and see.
I love that you had to stay here. Okay, so let's wrap this sucker up. If you enjoyed this podcast, you'll enjoy our Facebook page just as much. You can find us on Facebook at the Serious TV Drama Podcast. Like the page and join the conversation about this and any number of other TV shows that we discuss there. You can also find us on iTunes the very same way. It's the secret. Wow. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast. It's 2:00 in the morning and I was drinking. Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. 5-star ratings are always appreciated. 1-star ratings, not so much. And you can also follow us on Twitter at STVD Podcast. It's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. I kind of need to post more from that. I haven't been posting from that lately. I need to do that more. Anyway, there's only 3 of us left, so I wanted to thank you 2 for being troopers and sticking it out and all the way through. Unlike losers like Kate. No, I'm kidding. He's not a loser. He's only a loser of electricity tonight, I guess.
He didn't even join us tonight.
Yes, I didn't know Louisiana had such issues. I could see if it was like West Virginia, maybe. Anyway, we just lost our 2 listeners in West Virginia. Anyway, I want to say thank you to you guys. Oh, and Vicky, do you want to put in a little plug here before we wrap it up?
Yes. Our podcast is now being featured on popculthq.com. So go and check us out there.
Yay!
Yeah. This was episode 142.
Was it?
If you're keeping score, yes.
Was it really 142?
Yes.
And the Legends episode took place in 1942.
What does it mean? should have the X-Files music in the background.
Anyway. All right, shutting up. So I wanted to thank you once again. I'll say goodnight to you guys. I don't know which one of you will say goodnight to end it. It's always kind of fun to see who ends. But I'll start off by saying goodnight, everybody.
Good night.
What the hell was that?
It's a clock. It's not mine. It's Vicky's.
Vicky's clock. It's usually midnight when we hear that clock. We got the 2 a.m. chime from Vicky's clock. So now you know just how long we spent on this podcast, people. And with that said, good night to all.
The monarch of motion, the sultan of speed, the wizard of whizzle, yes indeed. Go from here to China in a no time flat. Beat the speed of light and you can't beat that. The
Flash, the Flash,
meet the mighty Flash.
The Flash, the Flash,
in a fight he'll smash and crash. Smash a whole gang of crooks or schnooks. Hey, he'll just clobber any kind of bad guy. Thief or robber, the world's fast. Yeah, man, the Flash,
the unbeatable Flash, the unbeatable Flash.
No one knows Barry Allen is his real name. Works with the police, justice is his aim. Wears a ring with the Flash's uniform in it when they